Salutations, sports nerds. It's time for another episode of War on Hot Takes, presented by Capital News Service. I'm Dylan Sin, and with me, as always, is Adam Zalanka. You can find us on Twitter, at War on Hot Takes, and alongside all of the other good journalism at cnsmaryland.org. Before we get started, we wanted to let you know about our schedule coming up. We'll be off the next 2 weeks, first in observance of Thanksgiving, and then in preparation for our final show, which will be released December 7th. That season finale will be a mega show featuring several guests and a rundown of the greatest hits of the podcast so far. Got it? Now on to this week. We have another good show for you this week, right, Adam?
Oh yes, we're going to once again examine the overwhelming mediocrity of the NFL, particularly Washington now as they fall to 4-5 with their loss to Minnesota. There's, of course, plenty to say about the Wizards, including a certain gift that a certain star NFL quarterback gave John Wall this week. And we're also going to talk hockey with resident expert Chase Pike, who covered the Caps' dominant win over the rival Penguins last Friday. But first, it's my favorite sport, NFL football, but something I've loved to say this season, throughout the season, is that every team in this league is wildly careening toward 8-8. I think maybe two teams have 9 losses, so 8-8 is out of question. But every team seems to be mediocre or worse in its own way. But Dylan, the NFC is way better at the top than the AFC, and I've got a fun way to show what I mean by that. 538.com, their gauge of NFL teams is called ELO ratings, ELO. Essentially, they run 100,000 simulations of the season after every game is finished. I don't know how this works. I wish I did. That sounds really cool. I'm no computer scientist, but their model measures strength based on results and quality of opponent to just calculate future performance. And Washington's ELO rating right now, and this is on a scale, I think, like 1,200 to 1,800 or something. Yes, that's the range all of these numbers come in. Washington's at 1,478, which is good for 19th in the league. And by ELO's model, they get a 4% chance of making the playoffs. Baltimore is right in that range, too, so let's go right there, the other team you guys care about. Baltimore is also 4-5 after they did not play this weekend and have a very similar ELO rating, 1485. Their playoff chances are 39%. Right. Now, that partly comes from something we talked about last episode, a very weak schedule to finish the year. Their last 7 games, 6 of them are against pretty mediocre or worse teams, right? I was going to say a different word there, starting with an SH that I shouldn't say on a podcast.
This is a family show, Adam.
It's a family show. But Baltimore is not the only example of this in the AFC. Oakland, a 4-5 team with the same ELO rating, in fact, as Baltimore, 14% of making the playoffs. And a lot of teams worse than Washington. 3-6 Denver, 8% chance to make the playoffs. 3-6 Los Angeles Chargers, 7% chance to make the playoffs. Cincinnati at 3-6, 7% chance of making the playoffs. The Dolphins at 4-5, but with the 6th worst ELO rating in the league, an 11% chance to make the playoffs. Houston, 8% as well, at 3-6, like Cincy and a lot of these other AFC teams. Can you imagine those AFC teams? I mean, Texans are good when they're healthy, but for the most part, those teams I just listed are crap, Dylan.
No, they're not good. And that just shows, as we've said, as you said earlier, the difference between the two conferences is vast. There are so many more good teams in the NFC than the AFC.
And yeah, top-heavy.
It is very top-heavy, and it's a change from what we've seen in the past. In the last decade or so, the AFC has been traditionally the better conference overall.
When Brady and Peyton Manning were in their primes, and Roethlisberger was in his prime.
It was almost always that the NFC was the weaker conference, and this year it is just absolutely flipped, and that's why Washington has so much less of a chance to make the playoffs than Baltimore does, even though they're very, very similar, mediocre teams.
Especially after losing this week to the Minnesota Vikings here in Landover, Maryland.
Right. As we said last week, this is the second in a 3-game stretch for Washington in which they play division leaders in all 3 games. This week it was against the division-leading Vikings, who won their 5th game in a row. The final was 38-30. And one stat that kind of illustrates what happened in that game, it was kind of a fluky game in terms of what Washington did on defense. One stat that illustrates that is that the Vikings threw for over 300 yards on the Washington defense. And how fluky that is, since Washington signed Josh Norman at the beginning of last season, the big free agent signing in the secondary, Washington's given up 300 yards passing just 4 times in 25 games. This past week was the 4th of those 4 times. In the first 3, Washington won all 3, and so the other team threw for 300 yards simply because they were down and had to throw a lot.
To try to come back.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So this game was very different. Washington was down much of the game, and yet Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs. They burned Washington's secondary multiple times, and that's why Josh Norman took some of the blame for this loss after the game. But it was kind of a fluky game. Their secondary has been much better than that in the recent past, so it'll be interesting to see if they can bounce back from that against another good passing team in the Saints this coming week.
Before we move on, can I just express my love for my new favorite player?
Who's your favorite player,
Adam? Adam Thielen. I like this guy a lot. I don't know why. I don't know if it's the fact that his name is Adam. It's hard to dislike another Adam. There are not many. There's Adam Vinatieri, and I had to hate him because he was a Patriots kicker for a while. He's so much fun to watch. He's so good.
He really is. He didn't really come out of nowhere this year, but he has been much better than expected. I'm very upset because I drafted him like in the 9th round of my fantasy draft, and then I traded him after 2 weeks, and he had a couple good performances, and I thought, oh, might as well sell high. Turned out he was actually just that good, and he has been incredible this week. He burned Norman at least twice on long passes. He really did have... He was the difference maker, because if Stephon Diggs is the only good receiver, Case Keenum is not going to be able to hit him every time. But Thielen really is the difference maker on the other side of the field.
I think you and I are both very high on the future of the Vikings before get off this topic. If Teddy Bridgewater comes back and is top 12 kind of quarterback in this league, doesn't have to be a superstar, and they get Dalvin Cook back next year from injury, Stephon Diggs, Kyle Rudolph, Adam Thielen, and the defense that they have, which is one of the best in the league, that's a tough team to beat if you're anybody.
Yeah, exactly. They are one of the best teams in the league, even without Cook, and with Bridgewater still hurt. So it'll be incredibly fun to watch them as this team matures. And now we'll get off the Vikings because that you guys don't care all that much about them, but we just had to talk about them because they are so good.
And to almost excuse a little bit this loss, because we do believe the Vikings are one of the best teams in the league. And you know who else is playing like one of the best teams in the league? Unfortunately, the next opponent for Washington, New Orleans Saints.
That's right. The Saints have won 7 games in a row now after starting 0-2. They are 7-2. They lead the NFC South by a half game over the Panthers. And so coming up this week, Washington will have to... It's almost a must-win game. They sit at 4-5 right now, and so if they lose, they'll drop to 4-6, possibly as many as 3 games out of the last wild card spot with 6 to play, and that would essentially end their playoff hopes. But if they win, they get back to 5-5. They could be only a game out if, you know, Seattle loses this week.
They really need to keep pace with the Seahawks. It's very helpful for them to have that head-to-head tiebreaker if they finish at the end of the season with the same record. Washington would get preference for the playoffs if they're that high up in the standings. That's good. And we mentioned earlier that the Seahawks were one of those division leaders they had to play all in a row. They were tied with the Rams, I think, at the time. They're now behind the Rams and have to play catch-up to the Rams in that division.
Right, so that's one of their direct competitors in the wild card race.
Definitely.
But looking forward at this game in particular, it won't be an easy game for Washington, obviously. As we said, the Saints have won 7 games in a row, and they've won those games by wide margins. Now, people will talk about, oh, they haven't really played anybody, and they've played some of the weaker teams in the league, and that's true, but they've won those games by an average of 18 points a game, including a 47-10 win against the Bills this week. Now, the Bills haven't been that bad this season.
I agree. I will speak on the Bills' behalf.
Right.
Yeah, the Jets split with the Bills, but the Bills, this team has won most of the games that you wouldn't expect them to win. They've hung around. They're still in the AFC wildcard chase, and the Saints beat them down like it was nothing.
Right. It was an incredible game for the Saints. That's how well they're playing this week. So Washington will really have to exploit the only real weakness that the Saints have, and that is in the running game. The Saints are giving up 4.7 yards per carry to opposing running backs, but they've been shutting down the passing game. They have a great offense, and so it really will come down to Washington being able to exploit that one weakness, a weakness that will be more difficult to exploit for Washington because essentially their best running back, Chris Thompson, is more of a pass-catching back. Their best running back, Rob Kelly, is out this week against the Saints. He's nursing both ankle and knee injuries. It's not clear how long he'll be out, but he will not be available against the Saints. So it will be up to Chris Thompson and Samaje Perine to step up in that running back role and really take advantage of the Saints' one weakness, and that'll be the key matchup this weekend.
It really will be. Like we said at the beginning of the show, like every team is kind of bad in some way.
Right.
Even the good teams have these glaring kind of weaknesses.
Yeah, that's 4.7 yards per carry for opposing teams is a pretty glaring weakness for even the Saints.
If you look at it on the other hand, if you look at it like you're the Saints, you think, oh, maybe we're going to luck out this week because we only have to face Chris Thompson, who's more of a pass catcher. Mm-hmm. We don't have to face Rob Kelly. Washington's not known for running the ball this season very much. We're going to see. That will be the key matchup. And as far as a player to watch, I've got a different guy for you. We got to call out Maurice Harris the catch of the year that he made on the first drive against the Vikings on Sunday. It was crazy. trying to describe it with words on a podcast with no visual doesn't really do this play justice, no. So let's not even try. But no. Harris came up from the practice squad. It was his first game. It's just so cool when those things happen. I think we've had a dearth of neat catches. There was this explosion of them because of Odell Beckham and players like him.
Right.
But with Beckham hurt for most of the season, we've had a dearth, I think. And we're feeling
that's a good word for it.
Thank you, Dylan. So we're going to just say that Harris is our player to watch, see if he can replicate that catch ever again. Maybe not, but at least if not that, then try to make a home, a permanent home, in the Washington receiving core. Now, should we move on to the Ravens from there, Dylan?
Yes, we should. The other mediocre team that our listeners like to follow, they were off this week, so they had their bye. They're still 4-5 and still somehow in the AFC wildcard picture. They definitely will need a win this week coming up against the Packers, who finally won for the first time since Aaron Rodgers' injury against
your Bears.
My Bears, yes.
Not anyone else's.
Exactly.
I mentioned the Jets earlier when they didn't need to be mentioned, and you didn't call me out at all, so thank you.
I knew the Bears, we were going to have to talk about them eventually, so I really couldn't call you out, and I would be hypocritical later, but whatever.
I just have a double standard, apparently.
Exactly. And so the Bears, they are bad, and the Packers were able to beat them without Aaron Rodgers. Whether they can do the same against the Ravens remains to be seen. Our player to watch for the Ravens this week will be instrumental in trying to help the Ravens end the Packers' winning streak at one game. Danny Woodhead will likely be back this week. Reports are that if he doesn't suffer any setbacks in practice this week, he will play for the first time since week one.
This is good news for the Ravens, who need some more help in the running game. But Woodhead, of course, not really the guy you hand off to a ton. More of a Chris Thompson type of back. You all remember Danny Woodhead. I was extolling the virtues of Danny Woodhead before the season started as like, oh, you know, he's going to add this element to the Ravens' running game by being a dual threat out of the backfield. Injured his hamstring in the first game.
Yeah, on the second series.
Yeah, very early. That early cut or injury, you don't want to see that happen to anybody that early in the season. But he's back. He's not out for the year. It's good. Or he's supposed to be back.
Right.
We're going to see how that factors into the Packers-Ravens matchup this week. He is our player to watch, like Dylan said. Not much else to say about Baltimore this week. We've got other things to get to. So let's wrap up NFL, and we're going to talk Wizards when we come back. We got a bit of a fun game we're going to play, and you'll see what we mean by that. Trying to project out, what if John Wall lived forever? When we come back.
Welcome back to War on Hot Takes, and we're going to get into some basketball talk now, the Washington Wizards. Now, last week when we talked about the Wizards, the biggest theme of their season so far was that they were very inconsistent. They'd beaten some good teams, they'd lost to some bad teams, and we weren't really sure what to make of their early season performance. This last week has given us a little bit more perspective on that. They played three pretty mediocre teams, and they won all three games pretty convincingly. They beat, in the last week, the Lakers, the Hawks, and the Kings, all by at least 16 points. And in the most recent game against the Kings, John Wall had one of his most impressive performances of the season. Let's start out with that. He went 8-for-9 and 4-for-4 from beyond the three-point line. So take that, Stephen A.
Stephen A. will be on our list the rest of the season.
If you remember, last week we kind of did a hot takedown of Stephen A. Smith saying that John Wall needs to improve his jump shot and do better in big games. And so last night, John Wall, as we said, was 8-for-9 from the field and 4-for-4 from beyond the three-point line. However,
against the Kings.
It was against the Kings. And the big caveat there is that Wizards have played two games against the Kings so far this year.
Yeah.
In those two games, Wall is 9-for-10 from beyond the three-point line. In all the other games, they're now, as we record this on Tuesday, the Wizards are 8-5. In the other 11 games that they did not play the Kings, John Wall is shooting 15%.
15%? Are you serious?
Yes, 15% against non-Kings teams, 90% against the Kings. So that's some food for thought. Maybe he'd like to play the Kings a little bit more often.
Yeah, I don't know if as an Eastern Conference team, you can't really schedule the Kings a ton. They haven't played teams like close by much yet. They haven't played the Knicks or like Charlotte yet, but they've gotten a lot of their West Coast games kind of out of the way. Twice against the Lakers now. Revenge on their early season loss to the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Split that season series. Speaking of people who can't shoot the three, Markieff Morris nearly brought the team down a little bit by going 0-for-5 from three on the Kings game.
And Morris has now been back since last Friday's game against the Cavaliers, and he's still working himself back into shape. I believe he said after that Cavaliers game, he doesn't feel like his young self yet. I believe that was the quote. And
he's
so,
28 years old. Right. But to be fair, I'm 23, and I don't feel like my young self either.
I feel like there's going to be like some 40-year-olds listening to this that are going to be very angry with us and send in angry letters because we're 23 and feeling old.
they're probably feeling old. LeBron James using Arthur memes on Instagram these days and just doing random videos on the subway in New York. Anyway, we digress. He's not feeling like his young self anymore. But to be fair, what I just said about Morris, the previous two games he played way better than what I'm describing against the Kings, right?
Right. Against the Hawks, he shot 8 for 10 from the field for 18 points. Against the Lakers, he was 6 for 7 for 16 points. So it seems like he has kind of gotten his first step back, his quickness back from the games that I've seen. But it's more about the consistency. His shot isn't quite there yet. And it's something game to game that he'll be working on as he works back from this injury.
Yeah, and when everybody is healthy and everybody is working together at the same time, once in a while, John Wall will have an off night and the rest of the team can pick him up, where in this case, Morris had an off night, but Wall was on fire against the Kings, so it didn't matter that Morris missed 5 3-pointers. My hot take is maybe don't shoot 5 3-pointers if you're 6'10" and not feeling like yourself yet. I don't know.
Wow, that was a hot take. No shooting until you've been back for a month. If you're over 6'5", that's Adam's hot take. Is that a pretty good summation of what you said?
Yeah, I know I'll have to apologize for that next episode.
Yeah, watch him just rain 5 threes and make you apologize next week.
Don't want to forget, we got to mention Kelly Oubre. You showed me this right before we recorded, this move he pulled on Buddy Hield. Oh, goodness.
It was a very good move. It was a good crossover. He crossed to the left and then right back to the right immediately. I mean, it was a good move. But he
culminating in a big dunk. For those of you who don't know what we're referring to, go find the video online. I agree. It's not that it was the flashiest thing on earth. It's just that he had one extra cross when Buddy wasn't expecting it. And then he just drove right down the center of the paint and slammed it home.
Thunderous dunk. It was an incredibly athletic play. And it's the kind of play that you look at it and be like, why can't you do that more often? He has the ability to be such a good player. And he's getting there. As we talked about on previous podcasts, he has shown a lot of improvement this year. So it's great to see Kelly Oubre kind of come into his own.
So we're going to keep monitoring the Wizards going forward. We don't want to finish this segment about basketball and specifically the Washington Wizards without talking about the biggest news surrounding this team this week.
I was going to say, this is the most important story that happened this week. And now if you didn't hear about it, we are here to tell you all about it because it is our favorite story that we are going to talk about today.
Yes. According to Candace Buckner of the Washington Post and other sources in the know, we learned that John Wall came to work and had a gift at his locker, and it was just Tom Brady's book, autographed by Tom Brady. Tom Brady's new book this fall came out, I believe it was September, is called The TB12 Method, How to Achieve a Lifetime of Sustained Peak Performance. My best way to really sum it up is he's just trying to capitalize on the several interviews that you've seen from the last 5 years. It happens like twice a year where he's like, I never eat sugar and I never eat salt and I just eat raw vegan.
Is that your Tom Brady
impression? No, it's not an impression so much as just my ultimate distaste and disdain for the guy.
Is that colored by the fact that you're a Jets fan?
Maybe. It's fine. Yeah, actually, the voice I was doing was more like a Belichick voice, but Brady doesn't talk like that. Brady's a smug little guy. But I've heard it for 5 years. Oh, his diet is so amazing. So now he's selling a book, basically, a lot
on his unique fitness regimen.
His unique fitness regimen and diet as well. This book showed up in John Wall's locker, to surprise him. Signed to John, incredible player. So random. This didn't show up in LeBron's locker.
No.
This didn't show up in one of the star rookies' locker.
No, it was nothing in Ben Simmons' locker, Boston.
Right, no Boston connection. You think it'd be
Kyrie
a Celtic?
Irving, yeah.
Right. He chose John Wall. Apparently John Wall is on Tom Brady's radar.
Yeah, and they said, John Wall said to Candace Buckner in the Post story that he's never talked to Tom Brady, they've never texted, but he did say...
He's the GOAT.
Yeah, exactly. He said he is the GOAT, and he's going to send Tom Brady a jersey and hope that he reciprocates. So now this could be the start of a beautiful friendship.
Striking up a friendship.
Exactly.
Well, goodness. To try to spin this a little more positively, and excuse my dripping sarcasm, but wouldn't it be great if John Wall played to his peak performance until he's Tom Brady's age, which currently, if you didn't know, is 41 years old.
41 years old.
And he's still one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Shows absolutely no sign of slowing down. So you know what? Maybe there is something to this fitness regimen.
So let's imagine that it worked. Here's what we teased earlier, this game we're going to play. What if John Wall lived forever by just adopting the TB12 method right now and using it through his 30s, and let's say he gets to 41 years old? How crazy is that? Well, very few players have played a game in the NBA at an age older than 40. If you're 41 years old or older, only eight players in NBA history have played a game in the league at age 41 or older. Vince Carter is going to turn 41 in January, and he's still going on a very bad Mavs team.
Yeah, he has totally reinvented himself as a role player on a bad team, which I would never have seen coming on Vince Carter's career arc, but there you go.
So he would become the ninth if he keeps it up for the next couple months at least. Manu Ginobili and Jason Terry are both still in the league at age 40, will turn 41 before the start of next year if they think they've got another year and a half in them. But let's imagine John Wall joins this elite company, which includes, of course, people like Bob Cousy,
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah. Anyway.
So we're going to hit you with some math here. We did a lot of math before we got in this segment, so we hope you guys appreciate it. But if we're going to spin this forward, and what we did is we took the average of John Wall's first seven seasons in the league and took the average total points, assists, and rebounds. Per 36 minutes. And extrapolated them out so he has the same every season until he's 41 years old.
We did not at all project any kind of regression.
No,
because this method promises sustained peak performance.
Exactly. Otherwise, his book is false advertising if he doesn't stay at his peak performance.
And why on earth would we not believe Tom Brady? we have to. So the TB12 method, John Wall, for the first 7 years of his career, and you know, it's not so bad because his numbers got better every year,
right.
But like from his rookie year to last season, big difference. Last season, he averaged 23.1 points per 36. And his averages, it's fair. It's not the hardest clip to maintain. 18.8 points, 9.2 assists, and 4.4 rebounds per 36. Now, he averaged 35.9 minutes per game those first seven seasons. To simplify our math, we figured starters normally play 36 minutes a game. So we'll keep that as the benchmark for extrapolating this out for years and decades. So if he kept on that pace, starting this year, he would have about 1,542 points a year, 755 assists a year, 361 rebounds a year. And let's just say, Tom Brady is helping him with his vegan food. Do that precise line for the next 15 years, slowing down. And then at 41, he just hits a wall. He's like, okay, I'm done. Let's say he won the Wizards' fifth title in a row, wants to go out on top. Add it all up, the first seven seasons plus that sustained clip the rest of the year, he would finish with 32,549 points in his career, passing Michael Jordan for fourth all-time.
Behind only Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Karl Malone, and Kobe Bryant. So we are talking legend status in that case.
Rebounds, I find this one interesting. He would have 7,632 rebounds, which is so much for a point guard. He would actually be third among guards all-time for total rebounds,
right,
behind just Jason Kidd and the triple-double master Oscar Robertson. But the biggest one is he would finish with 15,935 assists, which would just, in his last season of his career, get him right past John Stockton's legendary, all-time, hardly reachable number of 15,806 for most assists in a career all-time. Yeah. Can you imagine that? He'd be
the all-time assist leader. And for those of you who don't know, John Stockton's all-time assist record, he is 3,800 assists beyond anyone else in NBA history. Jason Kidd is second at about 12,000, so John Stockton has far and away the most assists of all time. And so if Wall stays on this pace, he's going to get up there and pass him.
Thanks to Tom Brady. Tom Brady should go in the Basketball Hall of Fame after he's done with the Football Hall of Fame just for helping Wall get there, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that book's a New York Times bestseller. It should honestly be the next Bible.
I detect just a little bit of bitterness. Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't want to end the segment yet because I just want to just hate on Tom Brady for the next 3 minutes.
Unfortunately, we can't do that. We already did our football segment.
Fine.
But we do hope you appreciated all that math we did. And obviously, John Wall is going to become an absolute legend with Tom Brady's method.
Absolutely. We hope... It sounds crazy, but who knows?
I think we know. I don't think that's going to happen, but you know.
I think we know. We've had fun here, but we've got hockey to talk about. Chase Pike is going to join us. He is our CNS colleague and friend, and he has been covering the Capitals closely. We got to talk about the other winter sport besides basketball, so we will be right back. Welcome back to War on Hot Takes. It is me, Adam Zalanka, here with Dylan Sin in the booth, and we're now joined in the booth by our CNS colleague and friend Chase Pike, who is on the hockey beat this fall. He's been covering the Washington Capitals pretty closely, and that is going to be the focus of our final segment today. Chase, welcome back.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, another returning guest. Happy that you are joining us because we've got plenty to discuss. As basketball season goes through, so does hockey season. Sort of parallel tracks here. The first thing that we want to talk about with you is Braden Holtby's hot start this season. He was just named one of NHL's three stars of the week last week. And he also reached an important milestone in his career pretty early on.
Yeah, with Friday's win, Braden Holtby became the second fastest goalie in NHL history to reach 200 wins. He did it in 319 games played, only behind Ken Dryden, Hockey Hall of Famer. After the game, Holtby wasn't that impressed with his accomplishment, but it's something we should admire.
Yeah, a lot of times athletes are like that. The individual milestone doesn't mean a lot to them, right? But it is still really neat to point out, and when only a Hockey Hall of Famer has done something that you did faster. Right.
Ken Dryden, absolute legend. My dad was a big Ken Dryden fan when he was a kid. For some reason, I never got into hockey, but my dad always told me Ken Dryden was my favorite player to watch, and it's so funny to hear him brought up in the context of legendary goalies.
Shouting out Mr. Sin one more time
exactly.
On this podcast. Nice. Now, the thing about Holtby, so he's what, 27 or 28? He's a young guy, and something I noticed about this season so far, how it's going for the Caps, is that they're 10-3 with Holtby starting in goal versus 0-5. When the backup Philip Grubauer is between the pipes, Chase, what do you think about that right now?
So it's common for goalies to split back-to-backs in hockey, and Philip Grubauer has played all four in the second games of back-to-backs, and he is currently 0-4. He started last Tuesday in Buffalo, 3-1 loss, and he was visibly frustrated after the game, which is uncommon for Philip Grubauer. He said he was tired of losing, and the reason for that is the players in front of him aren't as fresh. When you consider the game played the night before and travel, they've been giving up more shots, and it's been affecting Grubauer's numbers.
So he's like getting the short end of the stick in a way.
I would say so, yes.
So Chase, you have been covering the Capitals a lot this season, and last week on Friday you went to the Caps Pens game and you were there in the press box. What did you see that night? What can you tell us about that game?
It honestly looked like the Capitals' best game of the season. Well-rounded, the power play was clicking, the penalty kill went 4-for-4 on penalty kills. Pittsburgh did not score on the power play. And John Carlson was a revelation. He played 28 minutes and 43 seconds to lead all players and had 2 points and has just continued to be phenomenal in the absence of defenseman Matt Niskanen.
I just want to make sure we say, if you want to see Chase's dispatch from the game in Washington, it's on cnsmaryland.org, like all of our content. It is called Carlson's 2-point night lifts Capitals over Penguins. We'll throw that a retweet as well at War on Hot Takes. Make sure to look for it there if you are interested in reading. And the Caps, yeah, they won that 4-1, and that's against, obviously, without a doubt, their biggest rival in hockey.
The team that beat them in the playoffs last year.
I guess I want to get you out of here on this, Chase. Sort of a two-part question. Feel free to go any direction with this that you want. How does that win project out to next spring when ultimately we know these teams will end up meeting in a playoff series again?
Of course.
And of course. And overall, what do the Caps need to get better at right now?
Well, their division, the Metropolitan Division, is by far the tightest division in hockey right now. Entering Friday's game, the difference between first place and last place was 7 points. And in every other division, the gap between first and last is at least 13 points. So they need to worry about getting in the playoffs, ideally a top three in the Metro. But they could also earn a wild card bid. And right now, I think their biggest focus should be getting healthy. Brett Connolly returned to lineup Sunday against Edmonton. As I said before, Matt Niskanen, he's missed 13 consecutive games. According to Isabel Kershudian of the Washington Post, he's nearing a return, possibly even Thursday in Colorado. And once they get Andrei Burakovsky back, that will be big. So I think they're playing well now. Defensively, they've gotten a lot better since they did in the start of the year. I think once they get their full lineup back, they'll be in good shape for the rest of the year.
Chase has been covering the Capitals. He will continue to do so for CNS. Thank you for being on the show with us, Chase.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Glad that you were here. Again, his article is called Carlson's 2-point night lifts Capitals over Penguins. They will play Thursday night against the Colorado Avalanche. That about does it for us, Dylan, right? We want to remind you guys that there won't be an episode for 2 weeks. We've got a hiatus coming up. We've got first to observe the holiday known as Thanksgiving, and then we're going to be preparing for a big, big season finale. Lots in store for that one. Really excited. It's going to be available December 7th, so mark it on your calendars. An early Christmas present. One of my favorite phrases.
From the War on Hot Takes, guys. We will be giving you that Christmas present December 7th.
The War on Hot Takes family.
We are a family.
Our guest today, Chase Pike, thank you again for being here. We will leave it at that. Thanks for listening to War on Hot Takes.
We'll miss you guys.